Good morning. Thank you. I'm happy to be here to present this information to you on behalf of Carol Treston, who was unable to be here at the last minute. And so I'd like to acknowledge Carol, who is the Executive Director of AIDS Alliance, and also Linda Scruggs, our Director of Programs, who was instrumental in developing this program that I'll be talking about. I have no relationships to disclose. So this consumer leadership training program was developed in 2000, and it's an intensive 10-month program to train, support, and empower HIV-positive persons to assume leadership roles in their communities. It utilizes a train-the-trainer model with significant mentoring, follow-up, and formal obligations and milestones. And it is funded through a HRSA cooperative agreement and targets consumers from Ryan White Part D programs. The call for nominations goes out to all Part D programs and affiliates, and there are usually 75 to 100 applicants for 25 spots. Individuals submit applications with letters of reference and are interviewed. All participants are HIV-positive women currently engaged in their own health care and have ranged from PhD candidates to fourth grade or less reading levels and have ranged in age from 20 to 62 years old. They must be able to communicate via email and have regular access, either at home or their clinical site, and be able to travel to the DC area at least twice a year. All program expenses, including travel, are covered, and a small stipend of $300 is provided at the program completion. Each participant signs a letter of commitment at the outset and agrees to participate actively in trainings and communications. The goal is to deliver short presentations to small groups of 10 to 20 individuals in their community at least once a month. Participants are free to design their messaging and choose their venues. Messaging may be about HIV prevention, linkage to care, staying in care, or how to live positively with HIV. Participants are not required to disclose their HIV status in their talks, but they often do. And venues are as diverse as the participants and include beauty shops, drug treatment centers, churches, and even senior centers. Project staff work with the participants as they develop their talks and they choose their venues. And the local resource guide is a key deliverable for participants. This is developed with firsthand knowledge of who to call with accurate names and numbers for all needed services. Participants conduct a self-evaluation as well as have evaluation forms for the attendees of their programs. And these are submitted and reviewed with the program staff. So to date, over 250 participants have become trainers through this program, and they have reached 35,000 individuals in 39 states, DC, and Puerto Rico. They've gone on to become Ryan White Planning Council members and co-chairs, and they've gone on to become paid staff, start their own CBOs, and become consultants. AIDS Alliance was funded by the Idelson Foundation to then identify the required elements to replicate this national program at a local level. So external evaluators attended multiple training sessions and interviewed participants, and the following six core components of our curriculum, training approaches and program delivery were identified. And I'll go into more depth about these in the following slides. So first was peer role models. Trainers and guest lecturers are HIV-positive women, and successful graduates of the program have been hired as consultants to be part of the training team. Second is self-development, leadership development, and empowerment. Leadership through service to others is a value that strongly resonates with participants. The strength-based approach is one that sometimes takes a little more coaching, but all of the women participate in a SWOT, a strengths, weakness, opportunities, and threats analysis, and other exercises to identify their strengths, skills, and life experiences that embody leadership potential. Next is the investment of time over time. For many positive women, no one has ever invested in them and in their personal development and leadership development. So we feel strongly that one-time trainings, while a nice experience, rarely build sustainable skills and growth. Instead, it's the ongoing mentoring and scheduled check-ins over a sustained period, coupled with assignments and group activities that build success. Our program centers on measurable goals that primarily revolve around the outreach and community activities. Monthly and weekly work plans that include developing introductory materials, an elevator speech, the development of their specific message or messages, fact-finding for their locale, development of PowerPoint presentations and resource guides, and action plans on how to identify venues and get key stakeholder investment and permissions and so forth are all done prior to the first presentation. And again, the AIDS Alliance staff is available and assists participants with that. Practicing opportunities and collective learning is a cornerstone of the program. Homework is required and turned in. It starts before the first session, where participants are required to talk to someone, a family member or a friend, and decide and describe what they are about to embark on and why, which is not as easy as it sounds. Later, the practice sessions are videotaped and self-critiqued, and feedback is provided by cohort members and staff. The evaluation experience is a new experience for many participants, so receiving and acting on feedback either from cohort members, staff, or community evaluations from presentations is an advanced skill that is acquired in this process. Again, all of this happens over time and with practice, and over months, comfort, knowledge, and confidence develop with the experience. Finally, the need for ongoing mentoring is critical, but equally, if not more important, is the personal and emotional support. Many of the participants, although triumphant and in positions of community leadership, are still dealing with life traumas that may have in some way exposed them to HIV risk. Some of the content and the cohort experience of our program can bring this out. We encourage participants to see the value in mental health services and lead by example. For many women in our program, they have been elevated into a position of leadership in their community, either before our program or because of it, and they feel they can't show vulnerabilities back at their clinical site, can no longer seek help in the local support group. Maybe they're now co-facilitating that support group. And navigating through this new role and its actual and self-imposed emotional challenges is part of the support offered. So I think you can see from some of these quotes from a recent class that demonstrate the six core components. As in this one, showing positive role models and having HIV positive women as program trainers and guest speakers. Another woman said it was great to look into my strengths and weaknesses and how they play out, which shows the evidence of our strength-based approach, and all of the women have positive life experience and accomplishment and triumph to acknowledge. Also, they realize the investment in them, as well as an emphasis on the concept of service to others. This quote shows some of the use of the defined tasks and written action plans that were developed over time and how that was useful. Also, the group learning and practice opportunities. And finally, the use of mentoring, technical skills, and personal and emotional support. So finally, I just want to tell you a bit about the AIDS Alliance for Children, Youth, and Families. Our mission is to advance the partnership between providers and consumers and to be the voice for women, children, youth, and families living with and affected by HIV and AIDS. We've been a national membership organization since 1994, and our constituents are women, children, youth, and families living with and affected by HIV and AIDS in the U.S., and their medical and social service providers. So historically, this has been Ryan White Part D programs. So I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have or speak with anyone afterwards if you'd like more information. But I also would encourage you, if you would like more information about the program, to be in touch with Carol. Thank you.
Ready?
Thank you to all our speakers for sharing their research and insights into design and implementation of HIV/AIDS education and interventions in various settings. So we went across a couple of different settings, clinical settings, congregations, as well as community, and also empowerment across the board, I think. We're not open for questions in the back. And please, the speakers will come up to the podium to answer your questions. Okay.
Okay, on the back end, so Select Health, the Medicaid managed care plan, they hired a company called OnFile to set up the back end of the system, to develop the system and to put together the interface. Now, Select Health hired someone who is very good with technical and computers to help to manage the relationship between the system and Select Health and OnFile, and to help to add elements or necessary elements that we felt belong in the in the interface for people to see. So that's how the system was built. Regarding income, yes, income was collected. And basically, the majority of the sample, because they're in Medicaid managed care, over about 90% of the sample had income of less than $10,000 a year. And you're absolutely right, because income does have, income impacts computer access and use. And a lot of the members of in the focus group and those who completed the survey, it was like the first time they'd even sat down and used a computer. Yet, however, even though they identified in the focus groups that they had barriers to using computers or they weren't very proficient, they also in turn identified members of their families that could help them or really good with computers, as well as places where they could access computers. For example, the public library, and there's a center in New York called Iris House where members can go there and access laptops. It's an organization for people who live with HIV and AIDS. In addition to that, the staff put together a group of technology centers, because there are a lot of those around the city. So they cluster technology centers based on the different boroughs of New York, as well as different neighborhoods of New York, and sent it out to the members through with their newsletter to let them know places that they could actually access computers.
Yes.
Oh, sorry, I forgot that part. At this point, no, not with the current CCD. But the PI has visions about turning the system into a personal health record. And the difference between a CCD and a personal health record, the CCD is an ICE document, so it's just what you see here. When it comes to a personal health record, there are tabs, there are links, there are things that you can do. It's very interactive. And in the personal health record, they could enter their personal information. But we're also perceiving barriers with the switch to that, because the system is more complicated. And we're not sure how well, if it's going to be too confusing, especially in the beginning, for the population, because they're not as computer proficient as, you know, other members of the population. So what we will do with the PHR is have a nice document, which will be the main view, and then have the additional tabs that they can go through as well. And when they get comfortable, they can explore more and enter information into that. Okay. Yes. So it's a hospital-based system, and this is a hospital-based plan. So definitely there are HL7 is the main security standard, and the system is covered under the security under the security measures of the New York Presbyterian Hospital System.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So because sometimes Medicaid managed care
So a couple of things on that. So the reason that the Medicaid Managed Care put together this continuity of care document, because they receive a lot of this information for billing. So they receive the information anyway. So this is information that they already have. When it comes to the patients and understanding that, you know, this information, they have this information, the system has a log where the patients can see whoever accesses their records. And in addition, if a person drops out the plan, they have access to the information for, I think, between 6 months to a year. With the transfer to the PHR that I'm referring to, it's actually going to leave the Medicaid Managed Care Plan and go to a regional health information organization instead. And that's going to be the back end where more information will come in. But I think either way, there's a lot of issues with that because the patients do have to consent for people to view. And then when they view, they can see who's looked at it and the consent to be in the program. But either way, this information gets shared across, let's say, providers and clinical care sites anyway. So there's a lot of things there, but overall, the patients feel pretty much comfortable. Well, the ones who use the system now are comfortable with this. Is there anything else? Did I answer your question?
Yeah, I just think that, you know, I don't always put everything in the information. I mean, some of it is clinical judgment about what I bill for. Mm-hmm.
Well, when it comes to the managed care company, they only receive billable information. I think one of the greater concerns with sharing additional information would be when it goes to the RIO, where there'll be medical notes and things like that. So the managed care company doesn't get that information. And so they can only put in what, like you said, what you bill for and what the pharmacy data says and what the labs say. So that's their limit on it.
And it's data currently available.
And it's data currently available.
Yes.
You want to avoid the lines?
Mm-hmm.
Only because I have you here now.
Uh-huh.
Did you make a decision on the last application for the program? I think when it is September, although I didn't check.
Oh, I don't know.
You don't know.
I don't know that. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Kathy, yes.
Right. Yeah, I mean, as far as I understand, they do encourage women to connect to other advocates in their community. I don't know any further details on how that happens. So I would encourage you to be in touch with Carol or with Linda to talk further.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Versus families.
Right. Yeah, no, I do think that is one of our emphases. You know, it's not just on women and their families. It is on individual women who are either HIV positive or affected in other ways, maybe have a child who is positive or, you know, and also we work with young people and, you know, advocating for children that are affected by HIV and AIDS, so we're not solely family specific. And, you know, as this program shows, we are doing a lot to empower women to become more advocates for themselves and their communities and other women. So, yeah, I think we should definitely talk more and be in touch.
We have time for one more question. Does anyone have any other questions? Okay, the speakers are available to take any questions. And I actually have one question for Leah. For the South Austin Clinic location, they had a low viewership. They viewed it entire pretty low. Less than 50% of them had viewed the video. Did they have the opportunity to view that in entirety afterwards?
Actually, that's a really great question. A couple of things happened out of that. They certainly could have stayed around to view it in its entirety, much in part because Chicago Women's AIDS Project, so the intervention facilitators, essentially that person is paid to be there throughout the whole day. So they could have done that, but they didn't. They get in and they get out. What our facilitator did do that we thought was interesting is the Safe in the City video is, I mentioned before, it's three different stories. And so they're short stories. And so what our facilitator did creatively was actually just instead of showing the whole 20-minute video, only showed about 5 minutes of it, and so did the vignette, did the short story, then did the discussion from that, and then did the role play out of that. So what we saw in South Austin was folks really want to get in and get out, and that's no surprise. But what we also saw from our facilitator is really just kind of great implementation in the field, and really just came up with the idea of I can just show them one story and then we can do the role play. So we found that worked well in South Austin. Great question.
Thank you. Okay, thank you very much, and thank you to our speakers.